This is The Sweeper, the global football podcast with the best worldwide news and stories from the beautiful game, with Lee Wingate and Paul Watson.
Coming up on this episode, the Central Coast Mariners win the AFC Cup after 100,000 kilometres of economy flights, a Dinamo Bucharest player asks his twin to play in his place, and a toilet goal creates controversy in Sweden. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Sweeper Podcast, the show that tells you stories from around the football world that you won't hear elsewhere. My name is Lee Wingate. I'm joined by my co-host Paul Watson. And today we're going to start off the episode by profiling three interesting clubs across the football world, starting with one of Europe's most picturesque places, the shores of Lake Como. Paul, tell us about the club, their promotion from Serie B, and why they are interesting for Sweeper listeners.
Como are a fascinating club, and it depends how you want this story to be told. It's either a bit of a fairy tale, or it's really not. And it depends very much on your sensibility. So on the plus side for the fairy tale story, Como have returned to top flight. It's the first time since 2003, so they've been very much in the wilderness. And there's a very sweet story around one of their players, Alessandro Gabrieloni, who joined the club in 2018 and has come all the way up from Serie D, all the way up to Serie A now with them. And seeing him on the bench and seeing him unable to even watch the final stages of the game that clinched it because he's so emotional, there's something really beautiful there. There's also a funny backstory slightly that he basically realised he thought he wasn't going to make it as a footballer and took up an economics degree because he wanted to have sort of an alternative thing to do with his life. And he did this during lockdown. So he took his thesis sort of defense while he was wearing his Como football shorts. He posted the pictures of him wearing his Como football shorts and just a sort of smart shirt above it. And it was quite sweet, really, that, you know, this guy who obviously believed at one point that football might not be his thing has now had this beautiful moment of going up to Serie A with them.
That all falls very much in the fairy tale column for me. So why might it not be a fairy tale?
Because, unbeknownst to me until relatively recently, Como are the richest club in Italy, which is quite a shock when you think about it. You think of all the bigger named clubs that are out there. But actually, Robert Hartono is the guy who owns them. And he is an Indonesian tobacco tycoon. His personal wealth is estimated to be about 24.2 billion, which makes him the 61st richest person in the world. So actually this club, Como, are richer and a lot richer than the nearest rivals in Italy, which are Monza, Silvio Berlusconi's club. They're richer than Fiorentina. They're richer than Bologna. Those are the other ones who are owned by sort of pretty wealthy guys and Roma. So in a weird way, you can kind of see this because, you know, they've got Cesc Fabregas in charge. They've got Thierry Henry as a shareholder. It's quite a glitzy undertaking, all of it together. But in a strange way, this fairy tale is, to some degree, sort of the opposite.
This rapid rise that they've had, I think it's 6 years they've come up from Serie D to Serie A. Can it be explained by that money, or is that a bit too reductive?
No, I think that is too reductive because it's not like they've suddenly pumped absolute fortune into playing staff. They have been very well coached. They've had excellent people throughout the club to guide them. Interestingly, they've got Dennis Wise as their club president, who, you know, has to take a share of credit. They obviously have Fabregas there. They have Ossian Roberts, the Welsh football coach, who has been, I think he's technically called head of development, but, you know, again, deserves huge credit because he's helped sort of chart this rise through the divisions, or certainly over the last season. He's been instrumental in sort of guiding them up one of the hardest divisions there is to be promoted from Serie B. So there's a risk of going one way too far and going the other way too far. But it is an interesting fact that, yeah, this club is not the sort of like small town fairy tale that it seems. One of the interesting things now for them is because they've ascended so quickly, their stadium may not actually be allowed to host games in Serie A. And because of the location of Como, there aren't a huge number of options for them. If the Stadio Sinigaglia can't be used, they actually could consider playing their games in Switzerland, in Lugano, which would be a very sweeper-style thing to do, to play your games in a different country.
My brain goes in so many directions when you tell me that. So first of all, the stadium itself is on the shores of the lake, and it's a bucket list one for me. I think for a lot of people, it's been widely described as the world's most beautiful stadium. You get YouTubers going there all the time. But obviously, the idea of a club playing their home games in another country, I think, as you say, it's about as sweeper as you get. And it's not something you really see. You know, we've talked about clubs playing in other countries, but playing their home games in another country, but still playing in their home country is it's a strange one.
Isn't it? And this is the thing, this stadium is beautiful, as you say, absolutely picturesque. You'd love to go there. I'm always very jealous when I see people posting pictures from going there, but it is tiny by Serie A standards. It simply just doesn't have the capacity, really. I think it technically only holds 8,000 people. That may be wrong. That may have been changed, but that's definitely what's listed as its capacity. Now, if that's the case, 8,000 is not, it's not going to get you a Serie A match, you know, comfortably. You're going to have far too many people wanting to come. So they've sort of got themselves into a bit of a logistical pickle here by ascending so quickly. And I hope they can solve it in a way that allows them to play in Como, just because it's so evocative as a stadium. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Obviously, one thing for them to worry about over the summer, but another thing for them to think about in the short term is that Cesc Fabregas has promised them a holiday to Ibiza to celebrate getting promoted to Serie A. I'm not sure that I would want that, to be honest.
No, I saw this. So I saw on Twitter, there were things saying, you know, what an amazing moment for these players as Cesc gives this triumphant talk. And he's basically saying, you know, yeah, mission accomplished. What an amazing achievement. You're all going to Ibiza. I think my heart would sink. Like, you're owned by the 61st richest person in the world. Couldn't we go to the Maldives or Seychelles? No, we're off to Ibiza. Yeah.
Let's head off to Australia next, because the next club that we want to profile is the Central Coast Mariners. Now, quite often we get DMs on Twitter from people saying, hey, can you cover my club or can you cover my league? And often there's not an angle for us to do so at the time, like a real story for us to focus on. But with the Central Coast Mariners, there really is. And to be honest, Paul, I cannot believe that it slipped under our radars, because it's quite amazing. I suppose we can forgive ourselves. You know, we are covering the whole world and there will be things we don't see. But the story of the Central Coast Mariners, based in Gosford on the east coast of Australia at the moment, is absolutely amazing. One of the smallest teams in the league with the tiniest budget, but they've consistently punched above their weight. Last season, they won the A-League Championship. So the A-League is split into sort of a premiership. That's the regular season. And then there's a playoff finals afterwards, and that's the championship. And they beat Melbourne City 6-1 to win the championship. And as a result, they qualified for the AFC Cup, which is a bit like the Asian Europa League, the secondary competition. But this season, they started off an absolute nightmare. So they lost a load of their regular players. They lost their coach to Hibs in Scotland. They lost their first four games of the season, which was their worst ever start. And since then, it has been an absolute fairy tale. They've only lost two more games in the rest of the season. They finished the regular season 2 points above Wellington Phoenix. They won the AFC Cup, which we'll talk a bit more about in a minute. And they're now two games away from winning the championship and becoming the first ever Australian team to win a continental treble. It's just amazing. And I don't know how we haven't stumbled upon this before now.
No, I feel quite embarrassed that I didn't know any of that. I feel very embarrassed, really. Yeah, that's absolutely astonishing. Do you know, is there any star power in the squad? Are there any players that I would have heard of? Or is this a very sort of like ragbag group of underdogs?
I don't really think there are too many standout players, or at least when I look at this squad, not too many that really jump out at me. But the coach, Mark Jackson, has done an amazing job. He was formerly the boss at MK Dons. And when he was brought in at the Central Coast Mariners, I think it was quite an unpopular appointment. They wanted an Aussie coach, obviously. He didn't start off the season so well. But yeah, since then, from strength to strength, and I think the bit that really stands out to me to tell you about is their AFC Cup campaign, because it has seen them travel 100,000 kilometres, around 2.5 times around the world, just to to complete this competition. They have been to the Philippines, Indonesia, Malaysia, India, Kyrgyzstan, and Oman for the final. So all in all, 100,000 kilometers. And they have had some amazing stories along the way. In their game in Malaysia, one evening, their football director, Matt Simon, and the team manager, Darren Dobson, went for a late night walk. And they were looking at their phones to try and follow a map. And one of them, just because he was looking at his phone, just fell into an open air drain in the street and dropped down 4 meters into a pool of mud and slush.
Oh my God, was he okay?
Yeah, I think it was actually very serious because he banged his head on the way down and then just fell 4 meters. And if you go to like a swimming pool, you know, the springboards that are like 4 meters, it might not sound that much, but it's really high up. So yeah, he just fell into an open air drain, fortunately was okay. That was Malaysia. Then the final in Muscat was delayed because of, you remember the floods at Dubai Airport that took place recently?
Yes. Yeah. Very dramatic flooding. Yeah.
Yeah. And it meant that they were in Kyrgyzstan, but they couldn't leave Kyrgyzstan to go to Oman. So they stayed in Bishkek in Kyrgyzstan for a few days. And they basically said, well, we're here. We're stranded. Let's explore. So they went out, they arranged a bus to take them into the mountains. And because Australia, I wasn't really aware of this until I did Erasmus and I was studying with Australian guys that had never seen snow before. But these players are in Kyrgyzstan, just really enjoying seeing snow for the first time.
That's a lovely story. I've spent my time in stuck in Bishkek myself, so that's really interesting that they would get stuck. And it's a beautiful country. If you actually get out and explore it, Kyrgyzstan's amazingly beautiful. So good they made the best of that.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they've been taking it all in their stride. And what's more, we talked recently about footballers having to carry their own bags and the pure outrage that a footballer could have to carry their own bags. Well, these guys, they've flown this 100,000 kilometers in economy class all the way.
Wow. I mean, why, I wonder? Is it because they can't do anything else? Maybe there isn't an option to go like more expensively than that, but good on them. It's no joke flying those kind of distances economy. And I say that as someone who on the other end has to basically just be able to walk, not someone who has to sort of compete at the top level of your sport.
I think there's an explanation for it, actually. So it costs a lot for A-League clubs to compete because the AFC subsidizes the clubs that take part in this competition, but it doesn't base the expenses that they're paid on the distances that they travel. And obviously the Australian teams have to travel a lot further. So basically, they would have made a $300,000 net loss if they hadn't reached the final this year.
God, that is a huge pressure to put on them, isn't it? I mean, it's remarkable. Again, it's something we've known about. It's happened for many years. But again, it brings home this thing of Australia competing in Asia. And the extent of how large those journeys can be becomes just enormous, doesn't it? When you think about Australia and Kyrgyzstan are so massively distanced places, and yet they're in the same confederation. It's very interesting.
It's a lovely story anyway. They have two more games left, as I say, in the Australian A-League Championship, the semi-final against Sydney. They won the first leg 2-1. If they win the second leg or get a draw, they'll then be through to the final, and then they could complete an unlikely treble. And if they do, I'm sure we'll touch back on that. But for now, let's jump back to Europe and talk, Paul, about Petrocub. Petrocub, from the tiny town of Hinchest, what amazing feat did they achieve just this weekend?
They've won the league title and in the process have ended Sheriff Tiraspol's 8-year dominance. Although it's more than that, really. It's 8 years since they didn't win the title. But, you know, Sheriff Tiraspol have been in a stranglehold on Moldovan football for years. So this was a huge upset, really. And I did see that when you posted about it on Twitter, there were a few people who were just absolutely baffled yet again by the Moldovan league format, because it is confusing, isn't it, that, you know, you look at that league table, it does not look like that season is being concluded.
Yeah, so you have the regular season, and as we've explained on the pod before, then the points get reset to zero. So effectively, it's like the whole season doesn't count before the final round. Essentially, you're just trying to get into the final round, and then that's where it matters. And as you say, this season, Petrocub finished above Sheriff Tiraspol. I think it is quite surprising to all of us that they've finished above Sheriff, but I think that if the run was going to end, perhaps it's not surprising that Petro Cub were the ones to end it, because they have finished in second place in each of the last three seasons. So maybe you could say this was coming, but I suppose the overwhelming reaction is still surprise, isn't it?
It is. There's talk of Sheriff have been weakened by the fact that there are stronger sanctions being put against their owners. And this is where we have to be very careful. I think we've spoken before about Sheriff's ownership. It's an ex-KGB group. Transnistria is a separatist or a disputed state within Moldova. So there are certain things that are alleged, and we aren't able to say for sure what they do or what they don't do. But there are reports that certain activities that Sheriff's owners were involved in are no longer as easy to do because of a clampdown on certain activities. This is very vague. I just don't want to be killed by the KGB.
We've already, I think, upset the Chechnyans on a recent podcast, so we won't upset the KGB as well. The KGB doesn't even exist anymore, does it?
Doesn't it? That's what they want you to think. No, I mean, they were in the KGB, and there certainly are some slightly shadowy forces that, you know, are behind Sheriff's rise. And it does seem like maybe there's less investment in the club now than there was, which has helped Petrokup. But Petrokup themselves, I mean, it's a fascinating story because Hinchesht is tiny. I think it's, you know, it's not even in the top five biggest places in Moldova, which is not a place where there are an awful lot of big cities. And their rise, I think, has to be quite closely linked to their Ghanaian influence, which is not something you necessarily expect to hear when we talk about a Moldovan football club. But their president is Ghanaian, and they are bringing in decent Ghanaian footballers. So there is a link there that has certainly helped them.
This was quite a recent development, this actually, I think. Is it towards the beginning of this year, they basically entered into a strategic partnership with an unnamed company, which I always find incredibly shady.
What could be shady about that, Lee?
Yeah. when they say an unnamed company. But the Petrokub name, I think that refers to their initial sponsorship, which was a group of businessmen active in the oil sector. So the Petro is for the oil, and then the CUB are the first letters of the surnames of the three founders. But as you say now, the club has been taken over by an unspecified company, but with a Ghanaian president. This is the former CEO of Ghanaian football club Asante Kotoko. He helped them win a Premier League title a couple of years ago. His name is Nana Amponsa. And he's only been in charge since the beginning of the year, but obviously achieving results very quickly.
Absolutely. And one thing that was really interesting was on the eve of them winning this title, there was an interview where they were discussing, you know, what would this mean to the club? And they basically asked outright, what kind of bonuses are the players standing to get if they win the title? And I don't know if they're expecting this, but the representative of the club just answered and said, well, they'll all get about between 1,000 and 2,000 euros, which is not very much. And then qualified that by saying, our budget is a tenth of Sheriff's budget. So I think that's really interesting in itself that, you know, they're winning a European top flight league, and these players are really not making huge sums of money, and they're clearly operating at a very different level financially to Sheriff, or at least the level Sheriff are used to operating at. So it is a pretty remarkable achievement, however much this, as you say, an unknown company and petrochemical money doesn't necessarily, it's not as cuddly as it could be.
They could go even further. If they win the Moldovan Cup final against Zimbru on the 25th of May, they would then become the first club other than the aforementioned Sheriff to win the Moldovan double since 1998. So the story is not fully written yet. There could be another chapter.
Yeah, and that seems very possible. I mean, they aren't a tiny club by Moldovan standards. Like, they've competed in Europe, they've competed in the Conference League 3 years, Europa League before that. So, you know, they're a decent club with some pedigree, but this is quite an achievement to break up that domination of Sheriff and finally sort of end that weird situation where the champions of Moldova are from a region that pretty much doesn't identify as part of Moldova.
Yeah, so we now actually have a Moldovan champion of Moldova after this, as you say, 8-year title-winning streak was brought to an end. On the bonus pod for patrons, we'll be talking about another title-winning streak that could soon come to an end, and that Sturm Graz trying to topple Red Bull Salzburg's decade-long hold on the Austrian Bundesliga. We're also going to be talking about a Faroese village of 567 people that until last weekend had the longest winning run in all of Europe. So you can sign up to hear that and to hear more stories from Bulgaria, Gibraltar and Italy at patreon.com/sweeperpod. It costs £5 a month, can be cancelled at any time, and all proceeds go to helping us keep the sweeper going. Break time now. We'll be back with some significantly less serious stories in just a minute. Welcome back to part two of The Sweeper, where we're about to swap the serious journalism for some extremely silly stories across the football world. But how about we start this segment in Romania? Because every so often, a story pops up on our radars that is just so perfect for this podcast. And I came across one such story just last night. Do you have any idea what I'm referring to?
I think I might, because some people were kind enough to tweet it to us, which is always a good sign. If you wake up and people are tweeting saying "Sweeper Pod," you know something good's happened. But yeah, please do enlighten us on this Romanian story.
So this is a story that involves the 18-time Romanian champions Dinamo Bucharest, who are actually battling relegation at the moment, and they've now got another thing to think about. This is a story involving the player Edgar Lee, who was signed by the club in February, but perhaps hasn't been playing at all since his arrival. Because according to reports in Romania at the moment, he's gotten his twin, Edelino, to play 5 matches in his place, his identical twin. Can you believe the audacity if that's true?
Is his identical twin also a footballer then?
Yeah, but the big difference between them is that Edgar Lee has played in a whole variety of countries, Spain, France, Turkey, and the Netherlands. And he speaks English because he's been to all of these places. Whereas his brother, Edelino, has only really played in Portugal, I think, or Portuguese-speaking countries, apart from a short stint in Poland. So what's happened is the player, whether it's Edgar Lee or his brother Edelino, has arrived in Romania, and Dinamo Bucharest have just been absolutely shocked that he can't speak any English, because how is this player that's had this international career not able to speak English?
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Was his brother's theory then that it wouldn't matter because he's going to Romania, so, you know, no one's going to call him on the fact that he doesn't speak English? And then suddenly actually English became the language they used to talk to him, and he was stumped.
I get the impression this could just be something that wasn't very well thought through, so I'm not even sure that was considered. Well, I saw a tweet from the Romanian journalist Emmanuel Roșu, who said that Dinamo asked the player, whether it was Edgar or his brother, to show his driving license, and he refused, which looks fairly suspicious.
I'm refusing, but for very good reasons. I don't like my photo on it, or that's always a bit suspicious and fairly unprecedented. What I would be interested in now, are the club running the risk of punishment for the fact that they've now fielded an ineligible player?
If reports are to be believed, and the one that I read this morning was in Marca, the Spanish newspaper, there could be a chance that they run the risk of losing the 8 points that they earned in the 5 games that Edelino allegedly played in place of his brother. So that would really, you know, that would relegate Dinamo Bucharest. So this is a story that, if that is true, and that's a big if because we don't know that for sure, if it is true, it could have massive implications for the club. As we record, Dinamo Bucharest have released a statement on social media in which they've described this as a fake, slanderous and cancerous attack against the club. So obviously some pretty strong words. And it is sometimes difficult in these situations to know exactly what is true and what isn't, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And if a story is like this, it can just be too good to be true. It may be that this was all just a brilliant hoax. But yeah, I think it remains to be seen. And they're going to have to prove their case one way or another.
Let's move on to our next story now, which is in Singapore. We're going to talk about a social media admin who made a bit of a mistake.
Yeah, I saw that Singapore club Lion City Sailors triumphantly claimed that one of their players had run 10,543 kilometres in their game against Hougang United. And it was before they had a chance to correct that. It was obviously 10.543, I suppose, kilometres. There were a lot of tweets coming in that you know, had a field day on this idea that this Australian player had run, you know, equivalent distance from Singapore to Belgium in one game. And yeah, they have now sadly deleted and corrected. But before they did, there were some corkers coming out. We had someone saying, yeah, we knew he had an engine on him, but I didn't realise it was a jet engine. That was quite good. One person quoted the famous Proclaimers song, 500 miles. You know, I would walk 500 miles, and changed it to, I would run 5,000 kilometres and I would run 5,000 more, which I thought was quite a good one. But yeah, it actually made me wonder what was the furthest a player had in fact genuinely run in a game. And that stat is quite hard to find because I think, you know, data's come a long way lately. You have to be at a certain level to have the number of kilometres like registered. But amazingly, it turned out that pretty widely accepted, Marcelo Brozovic of Croatia ran 16.9 kilometres in the World Cup 2018 game against Japan in the last 16. And that is pretty much acknowledged to be the most that a professional player has run in a game that we know of. And when you think about that, 16.9 kilometres. For context, the average, I think, at you know, top level, 12 kilometres is a pretty respectable, you know, effort. So 16.9 kilometres is just huge.
Yeah, that is crazy, isn't it? I think I remember watching that game as well. I think he was just an absolute sort of...
was he just running up and down? Yeah. Nowhere near the ball. He was just doing sprints.
Just looming up and down. And that's not Marcelo Brozovic's only lasting impact on football. Do you know what other trend he started?
No, I don't.
Do you remember, it was only like a few years back, no players used to lie down behind a defensive wall when a free kick was being taken until... To the best of my knowledge, Marcelo Brozovic did that in a Champions League game, and then it just became a thing.
That's amazing. If he's responsible for that brilliantly silly trend, I keep waiting for some sort of legislation to make that not allowed. But it's if he started that, then wow, what an impact. I'm surprised he stopped for long enough to do that. Maybe he's just knackered. Right, he'd already run 16k. He's like, oh, I've got to stand up for this free kick now.
No, it makes a lot more sense. So he started a trend entirely accidentally by passing out from exhaustion. Sweden next. Let's talk about the toilet goal.
Why not? Yes, we love these kind of things on the sweeper. It will actually remind some of our longer term listeners of another story that we had on the pod, but this is at a slightly higher level. Game in Sweden between Sunana and Infjarden, and the game was paused to move some snow off the pitch. And the goalkeeper of Sunana thought this was a good time to go for a little toilet break. But amazingly, the game managed to kick off before he'd got back, and Infjarden took advantage to score what was an equaliser at 4-4 while he wasn't on the pitch.
Yeah, this is absolutely insane, isn't it? I mean, just for a bit of context, this is really far in the north of Sweden. It's a regional fifth division game, but really far up north. And they've just got loads of snow, which I presume needs clearing periodically off the pitch during games. And yeah, it wasn't just a normal goal, was it? He just lobbed the ball over several defenders and into the back of the net while the goalkeeper is off the pitch. Did you know that the goal was actually not allowed to stand, by the way?
Ah, now I had a question on this. The stuff I was seeing said that the goal had counted effectively, or it didn't say it hadn't counted. But I was pretty sure that wouldn't be allowed, would it not? I don't think you can restart the game with him off the field, can you?
For whatever reason, the referee basically took that line and decided to disallow it, which meant that Sunana went on to win 4-3. And this has caused a lot of anger in the Infjarden camp. They filed a protest and they are basically demanding that either the goal be approved or the match is resumed from the 70th minute onwards, or there's a replay entirely, basically.
That's, I mean, to be fair, it's taking the piss. Sorry, Lee. Sorry.
Now, you see, that was a pun that usually I would make. But the thing is, Paul, you've just sworn. So I'm actually going to have to mark the episode for the second time in Sweeper history as explicit.
Is that swearing? Is that... I don't know. It's right on the borderline.
It's on the spectrum somewhere.
Oh.
But yeah, what is the rule? Because I was looking at some comments on Reddit about this. The goalkeeper is the only mandatory position in football. You need a designated goalkeeper at all times. But obviously in this scenario, they did have a designated goalkeeper. He just went to the toilet.
I actually don't know. I've lost my confidence in this. So if an outfield player leaves the field, I mean, it happens, doesn't it? You occasionally have a moment where an outfield player is caught short and dashes up the tunnel. And it happens. It happened famously to Gary Lineker, I think, didn't it? One quite big game. So that's not odd. But is it maybe that when you leave the field, you have to let someone know? Maybe it's that he left without, you know, coming off past the officials and saying, you know, I'm leaving. I'm actually really less sure now. I'm really less sure that maybe that goal should have counted, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the Regional Football Association in Sweden decides, because that game is still sort of up in the air as it stands. It took place a while ago now, actually, but we've only just found out about it. This was on the 26th of April. So we shall see what happens and whether the goal that's currently being described in the Swedish media as the toilet goal will eventually change the outcome of this fixture. Finally, though, today, we're going to move on to Brazil. This is a typically crazy story to end the episode with, Paul. Have you heard about what happened in Brazilian Serie D just the other day, the fourth tier?
That's the kind of question I only get asked by you, Lee. But no, I haven't. What has happened in Brazil's Serie D?
Well, it was in a game between Brasiliense and Real Brasilia in the fourth tier, as I say. The coach resigned at halftime, following criticism from the president, Luis Estevao. So the coach and all of his team just walked out of the changing rooms. And you know what the president decided to do for the second half?
It's going to be something ridiculous. No, what did he do?
I thought you might guess that he put himself on the touchline.
I did think that. Did he not? No, I was going to guess that, so I'm glad it's not that.
No, what he did is he put the club doctor, Jorge Bolivar, in charge for the remainder of the match. So the club doctor literally on the sidelines making the decisions. And you know what? The club doctor brought on a player called Cao Nunes, who scored both goals as Brasiliense went on to win 2-1.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So yeah.
It actually worked.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I wonder if he'll remain in charge now after that. I mean, he made a pretty strong case, hasn't he? 45 minutes, turn the game around.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's going to happen based on sort of club statements. They did say in a statement, Brasiliense informs that during the halftime of the match between Real Brasilia and Brasiliense, coach Paulo Roberto Santos, dissatisfied with the criticism he received from the president of the club for the team's poor performance in the first half and in the first two games of the competition, decided to leave the technical area of the team along with the other members of his coaching staff. During the second half, Brasiliense had a better performance. That was the official club statement.
Oh, that hurts, doesn't it?
That's, yeah.
Oh, you don't have to read much between the lines there to get the kind of the pain of that's going to hurt as a coach.
Yes, it certainly will. But that's it for our silly stories for today. We had some good ones there. Brazil, Sweden, Singapore, Romania, the football world throwing us some really great headlines once again. Before we round off this pod, we've got a bit of news regarding the Icarus competition. This was a competition that we spread the word about around a month ago. If you bought a Timpu City shirt, you would be entered into a competition with kit manufacturer Icarus to win a once-in-a-lifetime trip to Bhutan. And Paul, I believe the draw is taking place on the day of release of this podcast. So if you are listening to this podcast on Wednesday, the 15th of May, before 5 p.m, you can still watch Paul do his very best Giorgio Marchetti and pull the ball out of the hat to reveal the winner. Where can people watch you do that, Paul?
That's right. So it's 5 p.m. UK time, and it will be on the Sweepers Twitter, I believe, if we can work out how to do that, but I think that's the plan. And let me say, no expense has been spared in that a parcel has arrived at my house with 200 ping pong balls.
So these are all of the entrants. Sweeper patrons will have a double entry, won't they, into this competition. So there's an even better chance for you to win. But if you want to find out who has won this amazing trip, then you can watch Paul do that draw from, where are you going to be doing it, Paul? In your office?
Yeah, I guess just in my office. You know, I suppose that's probably the least weird place for me to do it, isn't it? Do it in the bathroom, it'd be unsavory.
Just take it out to the driveway. Just get your neighbours to crowd round.
Well, I thought, I haven't got a thing to draw them out of. Should I just put them in the bathtub? But actually, I think 200 table tennis balls in a bathtub doesn't look so impressive. I do need a receptacle, and I don't currently have one. So I will be drawing 200 balls out of something.
Okay. Well, that remains to be seen. You can find out what that receptacle is by following us at SweeperPod on Twitter. And you can see Paul do that draw at 5 p.m. on Wednesday, the 15th of May. But for now, that's it from us. We'll be back with another roundup of all the world football action on Wednesday, the 22nd of May. Tom, when you're editing this, I was broken by this point. I was really tired. I was so tired, Tom, that the Red Bull I told you I'd bought, I forgot to drink it. So I'm
and that does have more effect if you drink it, I'm told.